ominous sounding welcome.
When Joss didn't say anything, he sighed, as if bothered by Joss's very presence. Then he withdrew his pipe from his inside jacket pocket, filled it from a small leather pouch, and lit it, taking a puff and blowing out the smoke in small circles. The circles dissipated into the air as he sat beside Joss on the porch steps and sighed again.
"What's the message, boy?"
Joss's throat felt dry as he opened his mouth to speak again, but he knew that what he had to say was important, so he forced the words out despite the difficulty they were giving him.
"They know we're here, and they know what you're doing."
A dark cloud passed over Abraham's face then, and as it did, Joss felt a cold tickle race up his spine like the fingers of the dead. Abraham spoke again, but this time, his tone indicated that he was taking his nephew seriously.
"How were you contacted?"
Joss could feel the weight, the burden of the message he'd held in secret for much of the day lifting from him. He already felt lighter and safer, knowing that his uncle would soon be aware of all that had happened. Abraham wasn't exactly the friendly type, but he was definitely a take-charge kind of guy, and someone who Joss knew he could count on in the heat of battle.
"After getting supplies in town, I saw one lurking behind the funeral home. His name..."
"Its name."
Abraham's glare was sharp, sharp enough to cut right through him.
"They are things, Joss. They are monsters. You know this perhaps better than any in our group. They are animals, beasts, not people. Don't start referring to them as he or she, or else it'll make them that much harder to kill. They look as we do. The things even sound like we do. But they are not human, and it would be a grave weakness to start thinking of them as such. Do yourself a favor. Keep that distinction in the forefront of your mind, always."
Joss nodded his understanding, his face warming as it flushed pink with embarrassment. He should have known better. The things his uncle was teaching him could save his life someday. If only he would listen.
"Its name is Zai."
"Is?"
Abraham raised a sharp, questioning eyebrow.
"You mean it's still alive?"
Joss flicked his gaze around the porch, feeling very much like a complete idiot. How could he tell his uncle about his cowardice without disgracing himself completely? There was no way. Abraham calmly took a puff of his pipe and rested his elbows on his knees, a newfound patience lurking in his eyes as he looked at Joss, who was fidgeting with a hole in the knee of his jeans.
"What happened exactly, Joss? Point by point. I need to know every detail."
Joss blew out a sigh, and with it came words that he had not expected. He explained in full detail about exactly what had transpired earlier that day with the vampire that called itself Zai. And as he came to the end of his tale, the last remaining bit of weight on his shoulders lifted with each word. When he was finished, Abraham silently smoked his pipe for several minutes. The sight of it was oddly comforting to Joss. It meant that his uncle was mulling over their situation and planning, strategizing what to do next. The more time he spent with Abraham, the more Joss came to respect him as a leader. Abraham withdrew his pipe from his lips and bit the end thoughtfully before speaking once again.
"Let's gather the troops, and when we do, I want you to repeat every word you just said to me verbatim. Then we'll form a plan of action."
Action. Yes. Abraham was nothing if not a man of action. Something that Joss greatly admired. Something that he very much wanted to be. An hour later, every slayer in their group was gathered in the living room, poised and listening to Joss recount his tale. Only Cyrus refused to meet his eyes, and Joss had a feeling it was because Joss had insisted on telling his uncle first, despite the fact that he and Cyrus were absolutely closer than he and Abraham. He hoped Cyrus would understand. It was important to follow protocol, and the only way he could advance through the ranks of the society was by doing just that. But still, it weighed on him how disappointed Cyrus seemed. Or maybe he was wrong about it being disappointment in Cyrus's eyes. Maybe it was just concern for Joss's well-being and shame that he hadn't been there to take the vampire down. Joss finished regaling them with his tale, and as he spoke the final crucial words, Cyrus met his gaze at last.
If we're not gone within a month, they say they'll skin us all alive, starting with me.
Ash shook his head.
Why are they warning us? Why not just attack? It's not like bloodsuckers to give their prey time to escape. I don't trust it.
Patty stood up from her perch on the arm of the couch, eyes alight with flames.
Neither do I. I say we set fire to the woods, flush them out.
Cyrus shook his head in disgust.
Are you actually suggesting we stage a wildfire?
Her voice was a growl.
What if I am?
As our Californian brothers in arms have proven time and time again, wildfires do nothing to flush out vampires. They only damage the forests and homes that surround our fellow humans.
Then what would you suggest, nursemaid?
As they argued, the two of them grew closer and closer. It was clear that neither thought much at all of the other. Like Cyrus as he did, Joss was on Patty's side. The only way to deal with the vampires was drastic action. At last, Abraham held up a hand, silencing them both. All eyes fell on him with respect and awe, except for Patty and Cyrus, of course, who were still glaring at one another with seething disgust.
Perhaps we should count our blessings, slayers, and regroup elsewhere. There's nothing saying we can't use this to our advantage. After all, they'll likely send a scout to check the house in a month to ensure we've gone. So let's give them what they want. Leave. But watch the house from a distance and trail their scout back to the hive where we'll dispatch them all.
At this, Patty nodded and Cyrus relaxed his shoulders some. From the back of the room, Creation spoke up.
Abraham, do you think this hive has anything at all to do with the Provis myth we've been hearing so much about lately?
Abraham's calm face turned instantly red with anger. He whipped his head around, but before his eyes could even fall on the slayer who'd spoken, two others had already dragged him out of the room. Abraham looked at Joss and said,
"Forget you heard that."
Joss nodded, but despite his silent promise, a word, strange and somehow meaningful, rang in his ears, and he couldn't help but wonder what it meant. It was a word his mind would replay again and again as he laid down to rest that night, watching the moonbeams dance on his pillow. Provis. What on earth could it mean? And why did it make his uncle so furious? Chapter 18. Facing the Enemy. The next morning, Joss opened his eyes to Patty, who was standing at the foot of his bed. She tossed a pair of jeans at him and barked, "Get dressed. Your uncle wants you in the clearing in 15 minutes. She stormed out, as if Joss had said something to really irritate her, and Joss sat up in bed, rubbing his eyes. The clock on his nightstand said that it was just 6:15, but instantly he understood what had Patty all annoyed. Most of the slayers were out the door by 4 a.m. He wasn't sure why Abraham indulged him in extra sleep. He only knew that if Abraham wanted him in the clearing in 15 minutes, he'd better be there in 10. He slipped out of bed, throwing on clean clothes, and made his way to the kitchen. Cyrus was standing at the stove.
"I'd offer you some toast, but it looks like you've been summoned."
Joss nodded, casting a longing glance at the warm pan of apple cinnamon muffins that were cooling on the counter. Cyrus smiled and ruffled Joss's hair.
"Don't look so forlorn. I'll make you a good lunch, whatever you want. Now get out there before Abraham starts screaming."
Joss darted out the back door without a word and into the woods toward the clearing, cursing himself aloud for having forgotten his shoes. By the time he reached it, his uncle was already looking irritated and well on the verge of anger.
"Joss, it's about time."
"Sorry," he said breathlessly. "I was..."
Joss searched his still waking mind but couldn't seem to grasp anything of importance that he'd been doing before he ran out the door on his uncle's whim, so he grabbed what he could and ran with it.
"Putting pants on?"
Creation and Chaz, who were standing on either side of Abraham, exchanged looks and then smirked at Joss's admission, but Abraham spoke as if he hadn't heard Joss's excuse.
"There will be times when you will face multiple foes at once. Today's lesson, my nephew, is intended to prepare you for those times."
Joss blinked, uncertain of Abraham's meaning. Then Chaz and Creation split apart, moving equal distance around the clearing, and he knew full well what today's lesson would entail.
Joss was going to have to fight his way out of this clearing. He was still half asleep, hungry, and wearing no shoes. But he was going to have to fight for his life against well-trained, well-rested, well-fed, and the odds were well-armed opponents. His uncle had wisely dropped him into a likely situation for any Slayer to face. It was the perfect test, even though Joss was terrified to take it. He glanced around the clearing for possible resources, but found nothing at all that would prove useful to him. Every rock and stray stick had been cleared away. The only potential weapons available were in the hands of his opponents. For the first time, it really hit Joss hard that he could die here. He could lose his life in a moment, all for a need for vengeance. His heart pounded inside his chest, and, though he'd never dare admit it out loud, for a moment, Joss wondered if this was the right path for him, or if he was foolhardily chasing after vengeance that he might never obtain. Or worse, if he might die here in the clearing, leaving his parents completely childless. But any choice that he might have had before he got to the clearing was now gone. He was faced with two options, and only two: live or die. This wasn't about Cecile. Not now. It was about survival. And perhaps that was a lesson worth learning as well. After all, when he was out in the field, there would be no one there to help him, no one to save him. He'd be on his own, and if he died, no one would know why. Just like when he'd confronted Zai behind the funeral home, an act of pure stupidity. And what had he learned? He eyed his opponents. That's all they were at the moment. Not his uncle, not his comrades, just the enemy and nothing more. And readied himself, knowing that his bare feet would be a weakness on the weed-infested, uneven terrain. Chaz moved forward with more speed and agility than Joss was ready for and whipped the stake from the holster on his hip, swiping it at Joss. Joss heard a sound like air being sucked through a tube and realized that he'd gasped aloud. Instinctively, he jerked back, away from the weapon, away from the Slayer. The eeriest feeling came over him then, almost like he knew what vampires must feel like when they are hunted by the society. It was a feeling of pity, one that sank into Joss's stomach and nauseated him to no end. How could he feel pity for monsters that killed little girls in the dead of the night? How could he feel pity for creatures whose sole purpose was to destroy human life? Instantly, he hated himself and swore that he would never again show an ounce of pity to a vampire. Disgusted with his momentary weakness, Joss was too distracted to see the second swipe of Chaz's stake. It caught him in the bicep and he screamed. Blood poured from his arm and he whipped around in a moment of pure fury, grabbing the stake and throwing Chaz down hard on the ground. It took him a moment to realize that he was holding Chaz's stake in his hand. When he did, he thought about what Uncle Abraham had said about Slayers having a natural agility and knew that he was right, even though it had never occurred to Joss that he might be special in any way. Not that he was special. Only Cecile had made him that. He had been her protector, her brother, her mentor, and her failure. Just a coward who couldn't even stop someone from hurting her, from killing her. If he hadn't hesitated when he heard her cries, he could have stopped the beast from taking her life. But he had. Joss turned back to Chaz, but was blindsided by Creation, who tackled him. Joss flew backward, time slowing to a crawl as his body became airborne. When his back hit the ground, the air in his lungs came out in a gush, a groan its only company. Creation sat atop Joss, his eyes alight with certainty, his stake in his confident hands. There was no emotion on his face. He was as removed from this situation as he could be. Joss imagined that that was another lesson of sorts, that a Slayer couldn't let emotions dictate his actions. He had to commit to the task of killing vampires and not allow himself to feel. He imagined it would be the most difficult of all lessons for him to learn. Quickly, he ran down his list of resources, but it didn't take long, mostly because he had so few. Namely, 1. Chaz's stake was still in Joss's grip, but he wasn't exactly certain what to do with it. Ash hadn't yet taught him anything practical about weaponry, like how to wield a stake. Was this another thing that would come naturally to him? What he'd read in the Slayer Society manual was that a Slayer stake was a weapon that had to be earned, that one didn't just grab a stake and go off chasing vampires. It was a gentleman's weapon, and something to be held in the highest regard. In short, you had to build to that.
As Joss struggled against Kreshin, he waited for the miraculous knowledge of how to beat his fellow slayers without a weapon to come. It didn't. The most he could hope for was that Kreshin would grow tired and give up, but something about the way his face didn't show any sign of strained effort told Joss that was unlikely. So Joss weighed his choices and did all that he could do. As he bit down hard on Kreshin's hand, Joss wasn't proud, nor did he think it was a particularly brilliant fighting move. Really, it was kind of chicken, and more akin to a cat fight than slayer-to-slayer combat. But it was the only thing that Joss could think of to do with his limited resources. Fortunately, judging by the surprise cry and hesitation, Kreshin hadn't seen it coming either. Kreshin yelped and sat back, relaxing his grip on Joss's wrist just enough for Joss to shove him back. He fell over, a look of surprise locked on his formerly emotionless face. As he fell back on the ground, Joss whipped the stake in his hand forward, stabbing the ground next to Kreshin. Then he beamed. "You're dead, Kreshin."
"As are you, nephew."
Something cold and sharp pressed against Joss's throat. Abraham was standing behind him, holding a blade against his tender skin, and he wasn't exactly being gentle about it. Joss swallowed hard, his heart racing, and felt blood trickle down his neck. He took a slow, shallow breath, followed immediately by another. Then, without thinking, he reached back and grabbed Abraham by his left shoulder, flipping him over so that Abraham flew through the air, landing on his back in front of Joss. The moment Abraham's back hit the ground, shock filled Joss. He was stronger than he'd thought. Joss straightened his shoulders, pride filling him. He'd been challenged by 3 well-trained, highly skilled slayers and had won. It took several seconds for Abraham to stand, and when he did, he didn't look at Joss at all. He merely walked out of the clearing without a word. As Joss watched him leave, his heart sank with every step. Breathlessly, he called out, "Uncle Abraham, what is this? What is this supposed to teach me about hand-to-hand combat?" But Abraham was gone. Chaz had stood and was still brushing the dirt from his pants when he said,
"Run 10 laps on the long trail, and don't come back to the cabin until you do, little man."
Joss rubbed the back of his neck absently. He was still wondering what exactly he'd done to upset Abraham, and he had no idea where to find the so-called long trail.
"Where is it?"
Kreshin was breathing heavily as he walked by, knocking his shoulder into Joss's with a playful flare.
"When you find it, start running."
Chapter 19. Running on Empty. Joss stumbled toward the back door to the cabin in the morning light on wobbly knees. His lungs were burning so badly that it was difficult to breathe, so much, in fact, that his chest ached. His legs were throbbing with intense pain. The hurt of his day and night spent running couldn't even be masked by the rush of adrenaline coursing through his veins. It had taken him a long time to locate the long trail that Chaz had instructed him to find, and a couple of hours to run it once, let alone 10 times. He was reasonably sure he'd been alone on his run, but knowing the slayers, they were watching him, so stopping and lying about his run wasn't exactly an option. Besides, it was the principle of the thing. He'd know that he'd lied, that he hadn't lived up to their expectations, and that he just couldn't live with. He'd thrown up on his 3rd pass around the trail, and almost gave up on his 6th, but he realized something while he was standing in the woods, breathless and hurting and so homesick that he almost cried. He, Joss, who never cried, not even on the day of Cecile's funeral, though he desperately wanted to, desperately needed to. He wouldn't let himself cry, wouldn't allow himself that release of pain. He deserved to hurt, deserved to suffer. He realized on the trail when his lungs were aching so bad that he thought he might actually keel over and die, that this too was a test. But more than that, it didn't matter how many tests he passed or how much he impressed his uncle. He would never have Abraham's approval, and Abraham was simply waiting for him to fail, maybe hoping that he would, maybe knowing that he would, and Joss wasn't about to give him the satisfaction. This was about more than a desire for vengeance for Cecile now. It was about him and Abraham and this strange tension between them. It was about Joss proving himself to no one but himself and showing Abraham who was the better man in the end. His thigh muscles screamed as he stepped up onto the back porch
and his shoulder screamed again when he reached out to grasp the doorknob. He stepped inside, his eyes first falling on the clock in the kitchen. It was just after 6 in the morning, which meant that he'd been running, hurting, and puking his guts out for almost 24 hours straight. Cyrus was standing at the sink, rinsing out some pans, probably some that he'd used just a few hours ago to make the other Slayers breakfast. When he turned to Joss, his face went white.
Joss, you look awful. Are you okay?
Joss's legs wobbled a bit more, and he found his way to a chair in the dining room. If he didn't sit down soon, he was going to fall down. And if he did that, he might never get back up again. And then Abraham would win, wouldn't he? When he replied to Cyrus, his voice sounded gravelly, as if he'd been eating sand. It also sounded strangely distant, as if they weren't really his words at all.
As okay as I can be after 10 laps on the long trail, I suppose.
Cyrus shook his head, a look of disgust settling into his eyes. Disgust, Joss would have bet, for Abraham and his idea of training.
I had no idea you didn't come in last night. I thought you came back after I'd gone to bed. I thought you were still upstairs asleep. If I had known...
You'd what? Joss snapped, then sighed, feeling immediately awful about taking out his frustrations on his best ally here at Casa de Slayer.
There's nothing you can do, Cyrus. No one can do this for me, and no one can swoop in and rescue me every time I'm challenged. I have to do this on my own.
Cyrus watched him in silence for a few moments, then moved back into the kitchen. Joss heard cupboards opening and closing along with the refrigerator door and assumed that Cyrus was making him a sandwich. A few minutes later, Cyrus returned, and Joss realized that he was only half right. On a small plate in Cyrus's left hand was the most delectable-looking turkey sandwich that Joss had ever seen. In his right hand was Joss's Slayer manual. On the plate beside the sandwich were 3 pills. Joss raised an exhausted eyebrow and Cyrus slid a glass of water closer to him.
They're vitamins. After a night like that, you need to replenish your nutrients. Take your vitamins and sip your water. Small sips, but drink a lot. I'm sure you must be dehydrated. Then eat your sandwich slowly. I want you to spend the day resting.
I don't need to rest, he snapped, despite his gratitude toward Cyrus.
Then you'll study.
Cyrus dropped the journal in front of him loudly, his patience clearly at an end. Joss reached for the pills, and as he closed his hand over them, he met Cyrus's eyes. It touched him that Cyrus seemed to care about him, so much more than his own parents ever had in the last 3 years. It meant more to Joss than Cyrus would ever know. He wanted to speak again, to thank Cyrus for every shred of kindness he had afforded him, but the words refused to come. So instead, he nodded to Cyrus and popped the vitamins into his mouth, swallowing them dry. He was just taking his second bite of the sandwich and marveling that something as simple as turkey, bread, and assorted veggies could taste so delectable when Cyrus spoke again.
Survival isn't an easy thing, especially not in the wilderness. You have to know what to eat, what to drink, and how to shelter yourself. Meat is always your best bet. High in protein, and as long as it's a fresh kill, you don't have to worry about contaminants. Stay away from mushrooms. Many are poison, and though they'll fill you up, they won't do you as many favors as some other plants will in the wild. If you have to drink water, boil it first, unless it's fresh rainwater or from a running stream. You'll find many tips in the survival section of your manual, but don't be afraid to add things as you learn them. Joss chewed the mouthful of sandwich and swallowed slowly.
What about berries? Cyrus shook his head and tapped a finger on the cover of Joss's journal.
Only if you know what you're looking for. I've scribbled a few descriptions and images in the back of your journal to help you along, but you really ought to study up on the different species of edible plants.
Joss nodded, but paused to raise a questioning eyebrow.
How am I supposed to boil water in the middle of the woods? Didn't your father ever take you camping?
He shook his head, biting into his sandwich again. Embarrassment engulfed him. Was that what dads did with sons when sons weren't invisible? Took them camping? Showed them how to start a campfire? Cyrus furrowed his brow in concern.
No Boy Scouts? Nothing like that?
Joss swallowed again and shook his head, wishing it were possible for him to disappear completely. From within his pocket, Cyrus withdrew a small metal instrument. It looked a bit like a nail file. He held it up for Joss to see before laying it on the table. This is a Swedish fire steel. It contains a magnesium alloy that sparks to make a fire. Takes some practice, but once you've got the technique down, it's foolproof. Keep it. It's yours.
Thanks, Cyrus.
Joss closed his hand over the fire steel, his heart welling with gratefulness. It wasn't just the gift that had him feeling emotional. It was Cyrus's unfailing kindness.
For everything.
Abraham walked into the dining room then, looking well-rested, clean, and well-fed. He looked very much like he hadn't been out running all night long just to prove himself, unlike Joss. Joss lifted the sandwich to his mouth once more. It was almost impossible to keep his composure, not to scream and rant and yell at his uncle for everything he'd been put through. But somehow, he managed. He kept his cool. And just as he was taking that third bite of turkey yumminess, Abraham said,
"Cut and stack the firewood."
Joss immediately set his sandwich on the plate and stood, his muscles and joints screaming for him to let them rest. Please, God, just let them have a moment of stillness. Cyrus shot Joss a look that told him that it was okay to sit down and finish his sandwich, that he needed his rest, and Cyrus had the power to force that on Abraham. But when he did, Joss shot a look back. He hoped that his look was full of meaning, that Cyrus could understand without a single word that this was more than training now. Without a word to Abraham, he pushed open the back door, letting it slap closed behind him. And though it wasn't the most mature thought that he had ever had, Joss wished very much that the sound had hurt Abraham's ears. It would be something, at least. Outside, Joss found the axe stuck in the top of a stump. Beside it lay the trunk of a tree. It had been cut into three long logs, and the branches had been trimmed away. Against the back of the house was a quickly dwindling stack of firewood logs. Joss looked over the new logs and wondered how long they'd been lying there. Probably close to 6 months. Maybe a year, even. But he was betting they were seasoned and ready for the fire. If he didn't wait long enough, the wood would be too wet and wouldn't burn right, wouldn't burn long enough or hot enough. But this looked ready. And more than that, it looked like hickory, which was a nice wood for burning. Joss may not have known much about surviving in the wilderness, but he knew all about cutting wood. His grandfather had shown him how to do it 2 years before. It had been one of the last things that Grandpa had taught Joss, before his life was taken by a vampire, like Cecile. Since then, it had been one of Joss's chores at home. He had two woodcutting seasons under his belt now, so if Abraham thought he was challenging Joss in new and unexpected ways, he had another thing coming. Of course, all of Joss's woodcutting had been turning logs into firewood, not turning entire tree trunks into logs, but he was reasonably sure that he could do it. After all, how much of a difference could there really be? Rubbing his hands together, Joss yanked the axe free and approached the first log with a confident step. An hour later, sweaty and broken and so frustrated that he really wanted to kick something, Joss knew exactly how much of a difference there was between cutting logs down to size and cutting trunks into logs. Huge. There was a huge difference, enormous, because while it was difficult hoisting larger logs onto the tree stump and chopping them straight through the middle, it was almost impossible to hack away at a giant piece of hickory in hopes of cutting it into large discs that he'd struggled to lug onto the stump in hopes of maybe, just maybe, chopping that stupid thing into quarters, just so he could chop those quarters into usable logs. Never mind the fact that Joss hadn't slept. Never mind the fact that he'd only had 3 bites of a turkey sandwich and not a single drop of water in 24 hours. Never mind the fact that he'd just run he didn't even know how many miles and was now expected to do chores for his uncle, an uncle he was coming to loathe with every fiber of his being. And now he had to chop another hunk from another log, lug it over to the stump, struggle to lift the stupid thing and drop it on the stump without dropping it on his foot, and then cut that stupid thing into stupid pieces that would fit nicely inside Abraham's stupid fireplace. Joss held the axe over his head and swung it down hard with a frustrated growl. It hit the stump and stuck in deep.
Remind me not to be reincarnated as a tree around you.
Joss jerked his head up to see Cat, who was standing several feet away, smiling with that crooked, sarcastic grin. Any other time, he might have been happy to see her, but right now he was tired and hungry and sore and just about as miserable as anybody on planet Earth could possibly get. Which meant that despite the fact that he was feeling extremely lonely, all he really wanted was just to be left alone. What do you want?
Cat's smile wilted, but only slightly.
She wouldn't be easily sucked into his misery.
I want world peace, Joss, but that isn't likely to happen.
In her hand, she was holding a butterfly net. Hanging from her belt was a jar. Several fluttery creatures moved within the glass confines. Joss hesitated, not wanting to be drawn into conversation, just wanting to be left alone, really, and pointed to the jar, unable to resist his obsession.
I see you've been out collecting.
She smiled brightly again.
Yeah, some interesting species up here. You should come over tonight and help me categorize them, unless you have plans to wrestle another mountain lion, of course.
What's with the axe murderer routine anyway? Reminds me of a preview I saw for this movie called Psycho Slasher Chainsaw Guy from Hell. Joss raised an eyebrow and looked at her, his confusion overshadowing his frustration for the moment.
Wouldn't he have a chainsaw?
Cat nodded enthusiastically.
And an axe. And a pair of hedge clippers. It's supposed to be brutal, but doesn't come out for a while. Maybe when it does, we can go see it. I mean, you know, if we, like, visit one another this fall or something. You know, if you want to.
He shook his head. They couldn't visit one another. They couldn't be friends. Joss was about to become a slayer. He couldn't have close ties, blossoming friendships. It would make it that much harder for him to move around, to leave people behind. There was no way he could risk becoming close to someone. He never should have even started. With a glare at Cat, he yanked the axe out of the stump again.
Get out of here, Cat! We're not friends. We never were friends. We'll never be friends.
Cat stepped back, her eyes wide as if he'd just punched her in the gut. Wordlessly, she shook her head, but she didn't leave.
Joss screamed, Get away from me!
Her eyes welled up with tears, tears that were soon burned away by her hateful glare.
Fine, I will.
Joss swung the axe as hard as he could into the log and it split. Then he turned and watched Cat race into the other cabin, slamming the door behind her. He knew that everything he'd said had hurt her, but what she didn't realize was that he'd probably just made her whole life a lot easier, and a whole lot better, by removing himself from it. She didn't want to be friends with a slayer, let alone with a boy who wasn't capable of protecting anyone, even himself. Chapter 20. J'accuse. Joss tossed the last two logs onto the cord of wood lined up against the back of the house. The palms of his hands were now home to several splinters, and Joss had discovered a type of exhaustion that he hadn't known existed. His shoulders were burning, even though he wasn't really using them anymore. For a long moment, once the wood was all in place, he simply stood there in a daze. The sun had set 2 hours before, and Joss had taken few breaks, none of them to eat. At one point, Cyrus had brought him a few jugs of water and insisted that he drink, but that was all that Joss was willing to do. There would be a time for food and rest, and that time would come once he was finished with the task at hand, not 1 second before. Now that he was done, all he really wanted to do was sleep, or at the very least lie still on his soft bed and think about the choices he'd made that had brought him to this place, to this moment. He turned toward the house, knowing that his efforts wouldn't coax so much as a single word of gratitude from his uncle, and lifted his left foot, ready to begin the small journey that would take him inside the house and up the stairs to his bed. But then he heard a noise that sounded like movement in the trees, a noise that sent a shiver up his spine and goosebumps crawling all over his skin. It could be a vampire, or worse, several vampires. And no one was here but Joss. Sure, he could have flung open the back door and called to the others, but part of him knew that Abraham would frown with disapproval at a sign of weakness like that. So instead, Joss picked up a large, thick splinter of the wood he'd been chopping and headed soundlessly into the woods toward the noise. It was probably really stupid of him to try and face a vampire on his own, but maybe if he could take the thing out of commission, Abraham might start showing him just an ounce of respect. He had to try, anyway. When he reached the edge of the woods, his movements became even more careful. One snap of a twig and the beast would be on him in seconds. He had the advantage right now. He just had to ensure that he kept the advantage. His fingers were wrapped so tightly around the large splinter that the wood bit into his palm. He wasn't shaking at all, but on the inside, he felt as though he were quivering like a coward. He might be walking into a trap. He might be willingly provoking his own death. And he had absolutely zero control over any of it, except for the sounds he made as he worked his way through the thick brush. He held his breath for as long as he could, then very slowly let it out, breathing in another lungful of air just as slowly, and holding it until he couldn't hold it any longer. The woods were pitch black and full of sounds that hadn't been there in the daytime. Frightening sounds. Sounds that could be anything or anyone. Hungry sounds. Joss swallowed hard, gripping the splinter even tighter, and edged up to a large oak tree. When he peered around the side, he saw a light in the distance. It looked like a campfire, but he couldn't be sure from this distance. As he moved closer, he heard voices. Familiar voices. He relaxed his shoulders and slipped the splinter into his back pocket. Until he earned a stake, it was a good idea to keep some kind of weapon around. Who knew when a vampire might be lurking just around the next corner? He had to be prepared. He turned from the fire, but stopped when he heard Abraham speak.
"I remember my training days, and no one ever went so easy on me. You're all soft on the boy. Joss will never become a great slayer if you slayers keep coddling him."
Coddling him? Abraham was acting like the other slayers had been spoon-feeding Joss berries every breakfast and treating him to movies and popcorn every night. He ran his hand over the back of his neck, looking down the hill to where he'd entered the woods. He was certain his uncle wouldn't want him eavesdropping, but since Joss seemed to be the subject matter, didn't he have every right to listen in? After a moment spent debating with himself over the morals of purposefully overhearing a conversation that one isn't supposed to be privy to, curiosity got the best of him, and Joss crept silently forward, determined to take in every word. He got close enough that he could see the slayer's face as clear as day, but not so close that the light or heat from the fire would touch him. After he was in position, and fairly certain he wouldn't be caught, Joss's eyes fell on the small pile of logs beside the fire pit. As if in acknowledgement of all his back-breaking labor, his palms throbbed. He made a mental note to ask Cyrus for some bandages to cover all the blisters. Morgan tossed another log onto the fire.
"It's not like we're tucking him in with a teddy every night, Abraham. But he's just a boy. You're too hard on him." "Besides," Patty interjected, "he's talented. Given enough time, he could be one of the best. If he gets a chance, that is. If you don't kill him first."
Abraham shot her a look, and everyone grew quiet for a long while. Then Chaz shook his head, a bemused smirk on his face.
"I think he'll survive, but his parents might suspect something about his summer activities if the boy ends up in traction like you did, Creation."
The slayers roared with laughter, all but Creation, who looked more embarrassed than anything. Ash took a swig from a labelless bottle and wiped his mouth clean on the back of his hand.
"We have to be rough on Joss, otherwise he could stray. Look at Cyrus, for example."
Several slayers grunted and nodded their agreement. Abraham tensed, the semi-pleasant expression on his face vanishing in an instant.
"Exactly why I'm being rough on my nephew. I've officially reported Cyrus twice this year already. He's been beyond his training days for years, and still needs to be reminded of the cause."
Morgan shook his head, as if something critically obvious were escaping Abraham's attention.
"You let Cyrus get away with too much. What about the girl? You let him bring his daughter to our training facility. His non-slayer daughter. Being in charge, that's enough to get you reprimanded by the society."
"Don't tell me what will get me reprimanded and what won't, Morgan. I report to the society, not you," Abraham snapped. "You're not all privy to certain information, so just keep your speculation in check. There's a reason the society's allowing it. Or am I to understand that you're questioning their good wisdom?"
Morgan's eyes went wide, and Joss guessed that questioning the society was a major no-no.
Of course not. I would never question. I was merely curious.
Abraham tossed another log onto the fire, flashing Morgan a heated glare as he did so. His tone was full of warning.
Don't forget what curiosity did to the cat, Morgan. I'd hate to lose another member of my team.
Joss took a slow step back and was about to begin his descent down the hill and his journey to his soft bed when Kreshen spoke again, stopping Joss in his tracks.
We need to talk about Malik.
Patty shook her head.
I think it's fairly obvious that Malik's death was a message from the Hive, from the vampire called Zai.
Kreshen threw another log on the fire. Sparks burst up and out, dancing on the tips of the flames.
Maybe, but let me remind you of a certain new recruit 6 years ago. She turned on us in a matter of weeks to help the vampires. We have no reason to believe Malik's death wasn't an inside job.
A mutter raced through the group, and by the looks on their faces, Joss could see that they all agreed. All that is but Abraham, who looked disgusted at the very idea that a slayer would dare take another slayer's life. Could it be true? Could Malik's horrific murder be the act of one of the slayers? Someone who slept every night in the same house as the rest of them? Joss didn't know if he would ever sleep again, knowing that the person who could do that, rip a fellow slayer limb from limb, might be sleeping just down the hall. Or maybe not sleeping at all. Maybe plotting quietly which slayer they'd take out next and how. The thought sent a wave of cold nausea through Joss. Abraham spoke, his tone as curt as it could get. Joss could tell he was irritated.
I doubt that a man could or would take such a violent approach to murder. His body was in pieces.
Kreshen shrugged.
What better way to drive their message home than by making one of our own the messenger? A man might not be capable of tearing someone limb from limb, but a slayer might.
Abraham stared at the fire for a long time before speaking.
And just whom do you think it could possibly be, Kreshen? The nine of us have known and trained together for years. Which of us would turn on the others?
Chaz shook his head.
Not Cyrus. He may be a wild card, but he's loyal. He may not be here tonight, but only because of his parental duties. He and I have discussed our concerns at great length, and I can tell you, the man is one of us. Besides, I've seen him fight. There's no way he could have taken Malik down, let alone tore him to pieces. There's a reason Cyrus is a nursemaid.
A few of them chuckled, but all sound stopped once Ash said a name. Every animal in the woods was silenced. Every crackle of the campfire ceased. Even Joss's heart stopped beating when the name was uttered in an accusing tone.
What about Joss?
A long silence went by. It took a lot of guts for one of them to accuse Abraham's nephew, Joss could tell, but accuse him Ash had.
He's new to the group, Kreshen piped in. Strong, talented. He's a nice kid, but he did meet with that vampire and walked away with the message and not a single drop of blood on his hands. It could be him, Abraham.
To Joss's utter shock and amazement, Abraham nodded.
Watch him. Closely. If he was the one to take Malik down, if you even think you see any evidence of a lack of loyalty on his part, come to me. I'll take care of him.
Joss slowly, silently moved down the hill and across the yard, his mouth hanging open in utter shock. He knew that his uncle hadn't meant that he'd punish Joss and send him on his merry way. Back to his parents, back to his life. Abraham was going to kill him. Chapter 21. Determination. Despite his bruises, despite his exhaustion, Joss tossed and turned for most of the night. The little bit of sleep that he did get was tormented by terrible nightmares. In one, a shadowy figure crept down the hall to his room, where it proceeded to rip Joss to shreds. In another, his uncle staked him through the chest as the other slayers gathered around, laughing wholeheartedly. And then there was Cecile, always haunting him, always blaming him for her horrible fate. By the time the sun had come up, Joss was ready to get out of bed and away from his pillow. He was also very much in need of Cyrus's company and counsel. After all, what good were friends if you couldn't go to them for advice? As he moved down the stairs, he glanced at his still aching palms and remembered the blisters. Maybe Cyrus would have some antibiotic ointment as well. The other slayers could call Cyrus a nursemaid if they wanted, but the fact was that training and fighting and all of their hard work would be nothing without someone to patch them up at the end of the day. Joss wondered if they viewed Cyrus as less than manly for his caretaking responsibilities. If so, he thought, then they had no idea what it really took to be a man. The stairs creaked below his feet, and by the time he reached the bottom, he noticed that something was different this morning. No breakfasty smells greeted him. No sounds of pots and pans and cupboards and movement filled his ears. The kitchen, he realized when he entered it, was completely empty. No sign of Cyrus remained, but for a note taped to the cabinet which read, "Joss, I had to run to town for last-minute supplies. Sorry about breakfast. I left some cold cereal and milk for you. Abraham left instructions for you to run 10 laps today, but I believe you need a day off. I leave that decision up to you. Why don't you go say hi to Kat? I'm sure she misses your company. Cyrus." Joss read the note over again before filling a bowl with chocolate and peanut butter cereal. He read it a third time while pouring cold, crisp milk over the contents of his bowl, and a fourth as he devoured his breakfast. Then he moved upstairs, took care of his many blisters, showered, dressed, and headed outside, but not before putting on a pair of running shoes. A wise man might say that he was not just running into trouble, but away from his problems, away from Kat. And that man might be right. But wisdom wasn't always the driving force in Joss's actions. In fact, most often his actions were driven by pure gut instinct. And instinct told him that it would be better if he stayed as far away as possible from Cyrus's daughter until they parted ways at the end of the summer. Better for her, better for him, better for everyone. Besides, he had a feeling that Abraham would be watching him carefully today, wondering if he would choose to run or take the easy way out, so running was the only option. Joss had carried with him 6 large bottles of water and stashed them by a tree where the overgrown trail met the long trail. He stretched his muscles then, carefully taking his time, and within 15 minutes he was ready for his run, ready to give it his all, ready to prove himself that the first run hadn't just been a fluke, that he was tough enough to do it again, and this time to not feel like dying after he was finished. Not that he was a total wimp. After fighting against 3 skilled slayers, an hour spent locating the right trail, followed by running his first 10 laps barefoot, hadn't he slipped some shoes on his aching feet and gone on to cut and stack an entire cord of wood? And with barely any sleep at all, wasn't he readying himself for another run of his own free will? Nothing about that said Joss was a wimp, despite what some of his fellow slayers might say. It didn't make him weak, didn't show the slightest hint of lack of loyalty to their cause. Still, he wondered why they'd accuse him of taking Malik's life, and why Abraham would so readily agree with the possibility that he might be working with the enemy. Shaking his head to clear the troubled thoughts away, Joss began to run at a steady, sure pace. He kept his mind free and open, focusing only on the sound of his feet as they hit the earth. At the end of his 2nd lap, Joss grabbed one of the bottles and drank until he'd emptied it. Staying hydrated was making it easier this time, and Joss was surprised to be enjoying the run somewhat. Even though he strongly believed that one should only run when one is being chased, and only then if it's by something bigger and faster and meaner than you are, he started up again, and by the end of the 5th lap, his side was hurting like crazy, like his left lung had broken free and slipped down, squashing all the organs below it. Pressing his hand into his side, he finished the lap, but just barely. By the 7th lap, he thought he might die, but something in him, something dark and primal, moved his feet along the trail, pushing him with all his might. He had to finish, had to prove to himself that he could do it. He stopped to drain the remaining 2 bottles of water, having guzzled the other 3 at various points along his gut-wrenching trek, and a feeling settled into the pit of his stomach, causing the tiny hairs on the back of his neck to stand on end.
Joss was being watched. As he finished the last bottle and dropped it to the ground, Joss's eyes swept the surrounding woods, but he could see nothing. No slayers, no vampires, no cat. Nothing. So he began his final lap, tired, aching, sore, but proud of himself for having almost completed the task at hand. And while that strange feeling that he was being watched refused to leave him, Joss shook it off with every running step he took along the trail. His 10th lap. He was almost done. A sound to his left caused Joss to turn his head, but he had no time to recognize what had made the noise. An arm clotheslined him, sending him back, then down onto the unforgiving ground. He hit so hard that, for a moment, the air rushed from his lungs and his throat tightened, refusing him as much as a single relieving breath. He tried to inhale, but the small amount of air that managed to fight its way into his lungs burned painfully. The second breath came easier, but only just. The arm that had stolen his ability to breathe came down again, grabbing him by the collar of his t-shirt and dragging him to his feet. Just as his eyes fell on the familiar face, Ash swung his fist forward, clocking Joss in the left eye. Joss's head snapped back, the muscles of his neck tensing. The pain was immediate and intense, but faded quickly, first causing Joss's eye socket to feel like it was engulfed in flames. The heat was immediately followed by an unsettling tingle that made it feel as if his skull was vibrating. Joss didn't analyze the situation. He didn't look at advantages and disadvantages, didn't think about why Ash had attacked him or the possible repercussions of fighting back. He simply acted. Balling up his fist, Joss swung forward as hard as he could in a right cross that caught Ash in the jaw. Ash stumbled backwards, but just long enough for Joss to start thinking he was pretty tough. Then Ash leaped toward him, knocking him to the ground, pinning him there, battering his face with repeated blows. At first, the pain was almost too much to bear. Each hit crushed his will to fight back, and he shrank inside himself, wishing it away, wishing it all away. But then something deep inside of him, caught fire, and as that fire moved up and out, it grew by enormous measures until it was a raging inferno of leave me the hell alone. Joss brought his knee up as hard as he could. When he connected, Ash's face went white. A look of surprise crossed his eyes before they rolled back into his head. A strange squeak escaped his throat, and he fell to the side with an oof. Joss slid out from under him and stood, brushing the dirt from his clothes. He kept a wary eye on Ash, who was moaning and holding the place where Joss had kicked him, wondering all the while exactly what had provoked the attack. Ash had accused him at the fire. Was that because of some deep-seated hatred of him or something? He couldn't remember having done anything that might tick Ash off in recent days, or ever, if he was truthful. That might be the fault of his memory, or maybe he just hadn't been paying close enough attention to the things he'd said and done since he'd been here and how it might affect the other Slayers. Whatever it was, he now really wished he had been paying attention and that he hadn't made Ash so angry. Joss rubbed the back of his neck absently and looked at the trail ahead of him. He wasn't altogether certain he should get going. In fact, he was reasonably sure that the smartest thing to do would be to help Ash up off the ground, find out what had provoked him, apologize, and then head back to the house. He turned back to Ash, whose color had pretty much returned to normal, and parted his lips with an apology on the tip of his tongue. Before he could say anything, Ash said, "You'll never finish. Just because you took me out doesn't mean you'll finish this lap. You'll fail. And then you'll be sent home. You're not a slayer. You're just a boy." Joss felt his temper warm his ears. He bent down and said, "A boy that put you on the ground, and a boy that kicked you in a not-so-happy place. Twice." Ash's eyebrows came together in confusion. Joss pulled his foot back, aiming a second assault, and kicked him hard. As he started running again, abandoning the idea of apologizing completely, he thought about what Ash had said. Would Abraham really send him home if he didn't finish this run? If that were true, why not send him home before this? What was so important about this run in particular? And that still didn't explain why Ash had attacked him so viciously. After a few minutes, his eye was throbbing in time with his heartbeat. Joss started counting them in an effort to block out his thoughts. He'd only just reached 58 when someone grabbed him by the wrist and spun him around, flinging him hard into the trunk of a paper birch tree. Joss's right shoulder took the brunt of the hit. It felt like something was burning its way out from the inside, so he imagined that he'd probably ripped a muscle or tore a ligament. But at least he still had his breath this time. He turned around to face Kreshen, and then Joss blinked in surprise. He thought that Ash had likely caught up with him with a want for vengeance. He never dreamed that a second Slayer would attack him on the trail. Kreshen grinned like he was really enjoying this already, before whatever he'd planned had even begun.
You owe me $5, kid. I didn't think you'd make it past Ash, so now I'm out $5 in the pool because of you.
Joss shook his head slowly, completely lost.
I'm sorry?
Kreshen's grin spread wider across his face until it seemed he was all teeth.
Maybe not yet, but you will be.
Before Joss could blink, Kreshen came at him with a high roundhouse kick, catching Joss in the left ear. A high-pitched ringing sang through Joss's skull as he fell to the ground. It was almost beautiful. It might have been truly lovely if it hadn't been for the lightning bolt of pain that shot through Joss's head. He hit the ground, but the lightning kept coming, crackling through the bones of his skull, singeing every nerve within his head. He heard a moan, and it took him a second to realize that he had made the sound. Just as he acknowledged his moan of pain, Kreshen's foot came down hard on his forearm, and he cried out. He scrambled away from Kreshen, stopping only when his back met with another birch tree. To his horror, Kreshen was advancing on him again, that same stupid grin on his face. Joss dug his heels into the ground, scrambling to stand. When he was finally upright and on his feet again, he kicked desperately at Kreshen, to no avail, missing him by 3 feet. He wanted Kreshen to just stop, to go away, but he had no idea how to make him change his mind about beating Joss to a bloody pulp. Then, like a cartoon light bulb had flickered on over his head, Joss understood exactly what was going on here. It was a test. Another stupid test. And he had no choice but to finish it. He had to complete the last lap of this trail, no matter whom or what was standing in his way. Because if he didn't, he'd never be a Slayer. He'd never have what it takes to get revenge for his sister. He'd never be a man. He understood why his uncle had set up this lesson, and the others preceding it, without explaining what the lessons were. Because part of being a Slayer, part of being a man, was figuring things out on your own and dealing with them without counting on help from anyone else. Cyrus had said that being a Slayer was a lonely job, and Joss imagined that he was right. But you were lonely for a reason, because in the end, you had to take care of yourself and the cause, and no one and nothing came before those things. You were alone because you had to be, because being alone means being strong, and Joss was most definitely that. Or he wanted to be anyway. Again, he kicked at Kreshen, but this time he connected with Kreshen's right knee, the same knee he'd seen Chaz take out not long ago. Kreshen swore loudly, bending down, cupping his knee, and Joss saw his window of opportunity. He grabbed Kreshen by the ears and brought his knee up as he was bringing Kreshen's head down. There was a distinct crack as the bones connected, and the hit made Joss's leg light up with pain, but it did the trick. Kreshen howled, one hand on his knee, the other clutching his head. He cursed Joss's name repeatedly, but Joss didn't stick around to find out what Kreshen planned to do about it. He took off like a rocket, racing ever closer to the end of the trail. How many Slayers would he be forced to fight with? All of them? Would Cyrus be among them? No. Cyrus would never do anything to hurt him. Joss rounded the corner, honestly amazed that no one jumped out and grabbed him. He was merely yards from the end of his run. From where he was, he could see the empty water bottles sitting at the base of the tree. He picked up the pace, sprinting toward the tree. Abraham stepped out from behind it, a bemused smirk on his face.